people in the United States that are in psychological distress are more likely to go to a clergy before they go to a mental health care provider or a physician. Mm-hmm. And so we want to equip those faith communities to be prepared. Right now, very few faith communities ever refer those people to professional care. So we go into a faith community, we train the congregants, the staff, the clergy on how to recognize mental health care problems, how to make referrals. We set up support groups that they lead, faith-based support groups. And then we train a mental health coach, just a layman from the congregation or a staff member, through a 40-hour training. They learn how to do intakes and assessments, offer some therapeutic interventions. And so what you have when we walk away from that faith community is an equipped faith community that can not only recognize mental health care problems and get people to professional care and has those relationships, but can provide some therapeutic care for free right there as part of the kind of spiritual life of the church.
Welcome to Think About It, a podcast from Houston Baptist University here in Houston, Texas. At HBU, we empower our students so their beliefs can fuel their lives. From our competitive nursing programs to our world-renowned theologians, we prepare our students to thrive at the university level and beyond. And now we join our host, Dr. Jerry Johnston, with today's guest.
Dr. Matthew Stanford is the CEO of the Hope and Healing Center and Institute in Houston, Texas. He also serves as an adjunct professor of psychiatry at Baylor College of Medicine and at Methodist Hospital Institute for Academic Medicine. As an author, researcher, and educator, Dr. Stanford focuses on the interplay between psychology and faith issues. Their website is hopeandhealingcenter.org. They're doing a dynamic work, and it is a real joy to meet you.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
So I was with Kay Warren, and we were talking about the issues of our day with mental health. And she said, Jerry, you've got to talk to Dr. Stanford. And so you've got a great introduction.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah, Kay and I, we speak regularly at mental health and faith conferences around the community and around the country. And we came together actually in a committee that was put together by the executive or the president of the executive committee, the Southern Baptist Convention, to kind of help develop some more mental health related ministries within Southern Baptist.
That's great. Let's talk first about the Hope and Healing Center, and then mm-hmm. I want to talk about your bio. But tell us about Hope and Healing Center right here in Houston, Texas.
Yeah, the Hope and Healing Center and Institute is kind of an expression of St. Martin's Episcopal Church's kind of mission to the community. It grew out of the church. We are a separate 501c3 nonprofit. We raise all of our own money, but we are on their campus and they provide a building for us and some services. And so we serve the community. We are a fully comprehensive mental health care center. We have psychotherapeutic talking therapy interventions, as well as psychiatry, case management. We offer 40 support groups a week for all types of different mental health problems. But we focus primarily on serious mental illness, pretty much what you would think of as serious mental illness, schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, depression, and addiction. We offer all of our services for free. So about 63% of the people that come there have no resources. Last year, they came from 220 different zip codes. We have about 800 people a week come through the center. All of our services are faith-based. And I think people come there, one, because it's free, but I think they also are looking for an integrated type of care. We also have a research institute where we do research primarily around access to care. In the United States today, a majority of people with mental health problems receive no treatment, which mm-hmm. is a shocking statistic. Right. So we're trying to change that in the Houston area through research. And then we also provide programs for the community on all types of mental health topics, free programs. And then finally, we have what we call the Gateway to Hope program. People in the United States that are in psychological distress are more likely to go to a clergy before they go to a mental health care provider or a physician. Mm-hmm. And so we want to equip those faith communities to be prepared. Right now, very few faith communities ever refer those people to professional care. So we go into a faith community, we train the congregants, the staff, the clergy on how to recognize mental health care problems, how to make referrals. We have a large referral network that we've vetted for them that they can refer into. We set up support groups that they lead, faith-based support groups. And then we train a mental health coach, just a layman from the congregation or a staff member, through a 40-hour training. They mm-hmm. learn how to do intakes and assessments, offer some therapeutic interventions. And so what you have when we walk away from that faith community is an equipped faith community that can not only recognize mental health care problems and get people to professional care and has those relationships, but can provide some therapeutic care for free right there as part of the kind of spiritual life of the church. And then we serve as a referral source or resource for them to help people get to care or to provide them that care.
Well, I want to tell you, that's a whole lot. So let's try to dissect some of that. You serve people from 226 different zip codes?
Last year, 220. They come from everywhere. We actually have a family that drives from Orange every week, which is quite a distance from Houston, with their mentally ill son who's in his 20s. Mental health care is so difficult to access that people will literally drive hours
sure.
to be able to get it. Finances and stigma are the primary reasons that people don't access care. And so what we've done is we've done away with the finance issue. It's free. Whether you can afford it or not, it's free. And we have plenty of people that come that could afford care, but the second problem is stigma. And we've done away with that as well, because you're coming to a faith community. We're on a church campus. We're not in the medical center. You're not walking into a psychiatric clinic. And I think the problem that we've had in the past in relationship to access to care is we've looked at areas within a city or an area and said, well, we need to go in and build a clinic there. And what you find is people bypass that clinic and they go to their faith community. Many times they don't understand that they have a mental health problem. They just know they have a problem. And where better to go to get help than a place where people are supposed to love you and offer you help.
And did you say 800 people a week?
800 people a week through our support groups and individual services, yes.
Okay, and so the name of your support groups?
Oh, we have 40 support groups a week. We offer everything, every kind of addiction support group, 12-step, you can imagine, sex addiction, gambling, debt, overeating, alcoholic, different types of substances, as well as groups for caregivers, which are often left out of mental health care. So for dementia caregivers, for people caring for a mentally ill loved one, for cancer survivor caregivers, and then a whole set of support groups that are offered for people with different types of illnesses. So we have a general mental illness group, mostly has people with schizophrenia. We have trauma groups for people, for women who have been the victims of sexual assault or domestic violence, depression and bipolar groups. And we collaborate with different organizations within the community like NAMI or ReMind that let them come in, give them a space to offer their groups as well as our groups. And that ultimately gives everyone an opportunity to come. Our groups are all faith-based. All of our services are faith-based. But we do offer some groups there through collaborations that are what you think of secular or non-faith-based. But that gives everyone an opportunity to come in. And once they're in, then they have an opportunity to access our services at a higher level.
What was the genesis of the start of Hope and Healing Center?
Yeah, you know, the Hope and Healing Center, like I said, grew out of St. Martin's Episcopal Church, which is the largest Episcopal church in North America.
Your pastor was unbelievable at the
Bush's funerals,
oh,
right. So
goodness.
if you saw either Barbara Bush's or President Bush's funeral, then you saw St. Martin's.
He was awesome.
And that's Russ Levinson is the rector. And the church had done a survey of the congregants, of the whole parish, to try to get a sense of what they wanted to do. How do they want to impact the community? What kind of a church do they want to be? And really something that came out of that was they wanted, you know, what they said is they wanted to impact people in the community that are broken by life circumstances.
Right.
So they already had a number of support groups on the campus, and they wanted to kind of bring those together. So the idea was brought together, this idea of Hope and Healing Center. And so a center where people could, initially it was focused around addiction. We would have support groups for addiction. We offer some intervention, some programs. And so for a few years, it just was really a very addiction focused. They also had the Institute where they wanted to do some new thinking around how these problems might be taken care of. And then in 2015, I came there and I had a little bit broader vision for mental health. I see addiction as part of mental health. You know, right now, about 43% of individuals with an addiction also have an underlying mental health care problem. Mm-hmm. So you have a dual diagnosis. So we're getting to the point where, you know, almost half of people with an addiction really are a mental health care issue as well, like a mental illness. So we broadened out what we're doing, and now we're serving people, you know, all over the place. We get calls from all over the country every day, people looking for care, and we will help them get care. So one of the things I would say kind of as an advertisement for us is if you're trying to find care for your loved one, contact us. You know, we may not be able to offer you the care. We may not even have a program for you, but we will help you find the care you need to get to. And a lot of times that's what people need. They need somebody to listen to their story and then to help them, someone who knows the system, to say, you need to go to this type of therapist or this type of a psychiatrist or caregiver, and this is where you need to start. Here's three referrals to start with. And right now within our system, it's so dysfunctional. Like I said, a majority of people don't receive care. If they do receive care, they're likely to just have some medication thrown at them.
Right.
You know, medication's wonderful. I mean, my training is in neuroscience. I love medication.
Right.
Not personally, but I mean, I love to use it. And the problem, though, is that it's overprescribed, and it's mostly prescribed by primary care physicians. And the mental health care system is never engaged. It's expensive. Most insurance doesn't pay for it. But there are resources out there. And what we're trying to do with the Gateway to Hope program is put low-cost or, in essence, free resources into faith communities. So right at the end of your street is a set of evidence-based therapeutic interventions that may not be everything you need, but at least will be a beginning. And it's also a healing community for you to recover in.
We might footnote that America probably leads the world as the most over-prescribed form of medications to people. I mean, it's staggering.
Tremendous overprescribed. And we've done it with other medications. In the 80s, we did it with antibiotics for children, and we've generated a whole set of antibiotic-resistant bacteria now. And we do it with psychiatric medications. And the problem is there's a lot of people taking medication they don't need to be, and that's a sad thing.
Right.
And there are a lot of people that do need to take medication and aren't getting it. And so, you know, I've been doing this for over 25 years, and I've worked with the most ill individuals you can imagine, schizophrenics that don't know they're ill, and bipolar disorder individuals. I've never seen anyone just take medication, and everything was great.
Right.
It's just one tool in a toolbox, and so you need therapeutic interventions, you need spiritual guidance, you need physical care. There's a lot of things that we take a very holistic approach to kind of move you forward so you can live beyond that illness. Unfortunately, the way our insurance is set up and the way people access the little care that they get, someone putting pills in front of them is about all they're going to get. Now, again, pills can be very, very useful and are beneficial if you need them. But there's a lot of other resources out there that people never access.
Now, let's talk about Matthew Stanford. I mean, your background. You're a Texan, but I want to go back to your high school, those formative years. How did you
don't make me go back.
How did you end up going in this track?
Because God has a sense of humor, I think, is the reason. Because if you met Matthew Stanford at high school, there was no interest in this. I mean, I was going to go to medical school and probably be a surgeon, and I was interested in that. So,
are your parents in the medical field?
No, my parents never went to college.
Okay.
So,
school did you go to?
I went to Pearland High School.
Okay.
And when I went to Pearland High School, there was one high school. It was just a small little country town.
Right.
And so, you know, I went from there to Baylor
in
Waco, Texas, and I got an undergraduate degree there. And while I was there, I started doing research with a professor in the psychology department, a neuroscience professor, and I just became really fascinated by research, just the process of questioning and then coming up with answers or the possibility to find something no one had ever found before. And so by the time I was going to graduate, I'd become so obsessed with research that going to medical school didn't seem like something I really wanted to do. So I went into the neuroscience PhD program there at Baylor so I could just continue to work with the same professor. And I worked with him, and I got a PhD in behavioral neuroscience. And I went from, again, no interest in faith in psychology at that time. I was actually trained as a psychophysiologist, which is a person who does like EEGs and brain imaging, and I was interested in impulsive behavior and aggressive behavior. So I moved from Baylor to University of Texas Medical Branch in Galveston, a medical school, and began working with violent inmates, trying to figure out, you know, why would they lose control, were there treatments that we could come up for that. Did that for several years, and then moved from there to the University of New Orleans. Again, still not interested in, I mean, I am a person of faith, and I'm going to faith communities. But when I moved to New Orleans, I set up a lab there at the University of New Orleans, and for a period of time, I was the chair there, and still studying aggression and impulse control. And the way this all really began is, as a person of faith, I was going to different faith communities, and I'm in that environment, and people knew I was in mental health, and so they would pull me aside, congregants, and they would ask me questions about their own mental health issues or their children's particularly. And a lot of times those questions had tremendous spiritual aspects to them. And sometimes they were just outright disturbing. You know, the pastor told me that my bipolar disorder is a sin. What do you think about that? And, you know, I found that odd because I'm going to the same church that that pastor was in. I knew him. I didn't believe that. What did he think of me? What did I miss something? And so I really became kind of fascinated with the idea of spiritual issues and psychology, because there's clearly overlap. I mean, there are things that we deal with as disorders that are clearly sinful behaviors. I wrote a whole book on that, actually. And so,
and what was the title of that book?
The Biology of Sin. Okay, so I mean, you know, and then I, you know,
it reminds me of Carl Menninger's book, Whatever Happened to Sin.
And so you know, there's an overlap, you know, and there are tremendous spiritual aspects to all illness. And so became interested in that. But like a good academic, I thought, you know, what I'll do is I'll write a book one day. That'll fix everything, you know. So academics write books that go on shelves and no one. So I started throwing things into a folder, and then I had, you know, I had interaction with a good friend of ours who had bipolar disorder, and you know, the church was really shameful towards her, and that really generated this. So I started to research it, kind of started to write around it, and then I had the opportunity to move from the University of New Orleans back to Baylor to be a professor there. And when I made that move, I set up my aggression lab, but I also had the opportunity, because Baylor has a really high-quality clinical program, to set up a separate lab looking at psychology and issues of faith, particularly how people with mental health problems engage faith communities. Because like I said earlier, they're more likely to go there first before a mental health care provider or physician. And, you know, we found a lot of things. We published a lot of things. You know, we found most faith communities aren't equipped. They miss the issue. They have such a spiritual mindset that they see only the spiritual. And it's fine to say we work in the spiritual, but you have to recognize the other things, because we're a holistic being.
Yes.
We're physical and non-physical. And so so I wrote a book called Grace for the Afflicted that came out in 2008. It was about mental health issues and the kind of a clinical and a biblical perspective on both. And then there was an expansion or revision that came out in 2017. And then later this year, I have a book coming out called Grace for the Children, which is on children's disorders, but looking at each of them from a biblical perspective. And what is the scientific aspects of attention deficit disorder? What is a Christian parent's response to that? You know, some people in the church say, even like some people in the general population say, well, it's just bad parenting. You know, you just need to discipline your child more. You know, how does that all go together? And so we did a lot of research around that. And then in 2014, I was contacted by the Hope and Healing Center, an institute in Houston here, and they were looking for a new executive director. The previous director was retiring. And I just saw an opportunity. During that time of research, we had developed resources for churches and training protocols for churches to make a faith community a front door to the mental health care system. Because what I was seeing was, you know, what else, what other medical condition, what other condition of humanity, and does a person go to a church before they go to anyone else other than a spiritual issue?
Right.
And here it is. This is our divine opportunity. God is sending to us people that have mental health problems, and we found churches were ill-equipped. So we developed support group curricula, faith-based support group curricula, cognitive behavior therapy curricula that could be done by a layman, training to help people do the four R's, recognize mental health care problems, make a proper referral, how to relate to somebody struggling with that or their family, and how to set up restorative programs within your faith community that will let a person know that it's a safe place for them to talk, a safe place for them to be, a safe place for them to recover. And that's how I came. You know, I often tell people when they ask me that question, how did you get to where you are today? I say, because God had a sense of humor, because this is not where I had planned on being. But obviously, it is where he planned on me being. I mean, I planned on being in a neuroscience lab my whole life, you know, looking at brain images. But it did equip me to take a very objective look at these things. Because a lot of times, you know, when you think about faith and psychology, you know, faith is a very kind of ethereal, difficult thing to wrap your head around. How do you measure something like that? How do you measure spiritual growth in a person with a mental health problem? And those are the kind of things we're doing. One of the things we're doing right now, for instance, is I'm working with some social work professors at Baylor to develop an instrument, a very short instrument that will allow secular therapists to engage the faith of their clients. Because faith is an important part of therapeutic interventions, and secular therapists want to know how to do this. We're told that we're supposed to be able to do it as part of multicultural factors a person brings, but how do you do it? And, you know, every therapist can't become an expert in every faith tradition. So what we're looking at is God image. We find that depending on what image a person holds of God, do they see God as benevolent or do they see God as critical? Even if they don't believe in God, they still hold a God image. And we find that some of the God images are very therapeutically beneficial, whereas others are damaging. Actually, your mental health is worse off. So if you knew that going in, so for instance, if you knew their client believed that God was punishing them with depression, that's a very damaging road you're going. They're not going to get better. As opposed to you, if you believe God was engaging and empowering them during this opportunity to grow. So we're trying to give secular therapists an opportunity to see that in their client as well. And they're very open to that. I've never seen a time in psychology that was more open to spirituality and faith than now.
Absolutely amazing. Jeremy Richmond was a neuroscientist whose daughter was killed at Sandy Hook. Mm. And he was on Dan Harris's 10% Happier podcast 2 months ago and then took his life.
Took his own life.
And Jennifer Ashton, the chief medical correspondent for ABC, is coming out with a book this month after suicide. Mm. Her husband and her got a divorce. Hugged the day the divorce proceedings concluded. No fighting, nothing. Mm-hmm. 2 weeks later, he took his life.
Right.
Neuroscience, I mean, you don't... Sam Harris, the famous atheist, is a neuroscientist.
Right.
How did you, in this field, was your faith ever challenged at all?
No, you actually gave a presentation on that yesterday. We're training some peer mental health coaches at the Hope and Healing Center, and I talked to them about that. And no, in fact, I find that most of the conflict that you see in the media or that you see talked about, even from the Christian side, they're straw men that are set up so somebody can have something to argue about.
Right.
I don't see the conflict. I don't see the conflict in anything that has been thrown up. I don't see the conflict in molecular genetics. I don't see the conflict in evolutionary theory. I don't see the conflict in physics. I just don't see it. Neuroscience has only strengthened my faith because it's, you know, the Bible talks about the mysteries of
right.
the gospel
sure.
and the mysteries of God. And there's nothing more exciting than the mysteries of science. Knowing that you don't know how something works, but that it does. And trying to figure out, you know, I used to tell people all the time, I remember when I did my interview at Baylor, actually, telling the provost, he said, how did a good Lutheran boy like yourself end up studying sin? Because I was, you know, I studied violence. And I thought that was the most interesting question someone ever asked me. And I said, you know, my great honor is that every day I get to study the creation and I get to see the effects of the fall. So as I study systems, as I study psychological phenomenon or neuroscience systems or mechanisms or neuroanatomical aspects, you know, I understand that what I'm looking at is functioning, but I also understand that it's damaged. And so when I see someone with schizophrenia and I'm working with them, I see somebody that's in great suffering and desperately needs help. So mm-hmm. that's my draw to them. But I also see a fascinating disorder of the brain that alters their reality, and their new reality is fascinating.
Sure.
And I know that they're the way they are because of a broken world we live in. And so, I want to relieve their suffering at whatever level I can. I want to reveal Christ to them, and I want to try to help them restore their life. So I've been to conferences where, you know, I've seen guys get up and say, oh, there's no way there was a literal atom. Our genetics just showed da 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 da. And they're, you know, and I've seen guys, you know, give talks on, and first off, you know, give talks on like the how big the ark could have been, and there's no way you could have got all the animals in. I'm thinking, wow, you got a lot of extra time on your hands. And because I got a lot of people over here that are really hurting that need help. So, you know, for me, I've personally, my life has been impacted by Christ. I've seen the impact in my family. I've seen the impact in others. I've seen the impact in my clients. And the scriptures are living and meaningful to me. And I just haven't seen the conflict. I remember reading a R.C. Sproul line one time that said, you know, if there was anything now There must have been something always, because that's physics. You know, something doesn't come from nothing. Mm-hmm. A lot of times I'll tell my wife when I do have those, like I'm looking at something in scriptures, I don't understand it, and I always say, tell myself, men much smarter than myself have looked at this and it in no way impacted their faith, so why should it allow it to impact mine?
Well said. Let me ask you, the board behind Hope and Healing Center, who is that?
We have an incredible board. It's made up of men and women that are, they have a tremendous business acumen. They're leaders in the Houston area in oil and gas and energy and different areas. They're heavily connected to the institutions within the city. We do a lot of work with Methodist Hospital, with Menninger Clinic, with Memorial Hermann. So they're heavily connected with those, as well as I would tell you that a vast majority of them have personal lived experience with mental illness. They have children that are ill. They've had children or loved ones that have committed suicide or died by suicide. And so they are very passionate about serving others that have these problems. But then also they are all passionate people of faith, and they want to serve God in this endeavor, and they want to let others know that there's a healing aspect to faith in mental health. So it's an exciting board. It's about 22 to 24 people, and originally, like I said, it was a kind of put together within St. Martin's Episcopal Church, but it's expanded. We have a lot of members that aren't members of St. Martin's now. The rector of St. Martin's does sit on our board as a mm-hmm. permanent member, it's just a very exciting group. We had a board meeting yesterday, actually. They are just really committed, as I am, to trying to transform the way mental health care is accessed in the Houston area. We're not satisfied with just being another mental health clinic that offers services, because, in essence, we just become another place you can't get to, mm-hmm. because that's what happens when you build. We need to alter the way people access care. We need to open more front doors for them. We need to provide more low-level services that are free or low-cost, just like you see in medical care, where you see a continuum of care. You start out at the pharmacy, you go to the urgent care, you go to your primary care physician, you go to a specialist. There's all different levels. You might meet a nurse, you might meet a paramedic, but in mental health care, there's nothing like that.
Right.
So we're trying to develop that. And if we can do it here in the fourth largest city in the country, with all these people living on top of this giant anthill, our hope is that we can then go to other communities around the country and say, look, we've done it here. Let us come in and show you how you can do it in your community.
It's such a great, great cause. And obviously, I think the stigma is lifting. Mm-hmm. We both know of the number of ministers who've died by suicide and so many other stories. Here at HBU, we have launched a whole curriculum around mm-hmm. mental health. Let me ask you a question. The practitioners that are providing counseling, are they lay volunteers, or are they, what level of folks do you have that are actually facilitators, shall we say?
At our center, we actually have licensed clinicians. As psychiatrists. And so we're just like a traditional mental health care clinic for serious mental illness, except that we're faith-based. That would be the only difference. So you would come there and you would be getting a cognitive behavior therapy intervention for bipolar disorder, but it's integrated with faith. So you're talking about your faith, your identity in Christ, building hope in God, things like that, as well as more traditional kind of, psychological interventions. You might take medication, we would provide that there. You might have case management to make sure your finances are okay or you have a place to live. So there's that. Now, what we do as far as our training goes, is we are training laymen, or what we call peers, to provide some level of service. So they can facilitate a support group. And that's well accepted in psychology, and that's clearly effective. But they also have been shown to be able to, using a curriculum, give some therapeutic interventions at a lower level, some cognitive behavior therapy skills and things like that, some tools that allow the person to manage their illness. And so we have a curriculum for that, and we train them on that. So right now, in fact, there's a class going on as we sit here at the Hope and Healing Center. We do that training every quarter. We've already trained 38 or 34 or so peer mental health coaches here in the Harris County area, and they are primarily at churches. Many of them are at churches that are in what you would consider mental health deserts within
right,
the city, where
course.
There's no provider
sure.
in the whole area. And so they can not only see you and say, yes, this is a mental health care problem and I'm going to refer you, but they can offer you some faith-based therapeutic assistance right there in your community, at your faith community, that will begin the process. So if you can't access that because of finances, or you won't go there because of stigma or paranoia, you can get some care right here. You'll begin to get better. And if you begin to get better, then you might be willing to go there. And this costs nothing. It also integrates you into that healing community. Because if a church isn't a healing community, I don't know what it is.
Absolutely.
I mean, we've been doing that for 2,000 years. And so
right.
we ought to be better at that than anyone else. And what I tell the people we train and when I tell faith communities is this. You know, the secular world has incredible resources. God has provided incredible resources there. But the faith community is a unique place where every aspect of the human can be engaged, spiritual, mental, physical, and relational. We can work at all of those levels, whereas out there, they only work with bits and pieces. So when someone comes into a faith community for care, which is what we know happens, the National Institutes of Health found that, we want to care for them. We don't want to just give you a phone number and say, call this person and go get help and then come back when you're better. We want to help you. So my vision is to go back to the old kind of parish church, you know, where the town is built around the church. They relied on it for knowing what time it was because the bell rang. But they also went there when they didn't have enough money for seed or they needed someone to help build their house or whatever. That did more than just offer spiritual care because we are more. God has made us more than just spiritual. He's made us physical. I don't know why he did that. He did. We have physical issues. We suffer physically in this world. We suffer mentally in this world, relationally. And so the church has an opportunity to engage that, and we're hoping to give them the tools and the training that they need to do it.
Matthew Stanford, the CEO of the Hope and Healing Center and Institute in Houston. You can learn more at hopeandhealingcenter.org. Dr. Stanford, I mean, there's just so many things that we could talk to you about. I'm just so grateful for what you're doing.
Well, thank you.
I mean, I don't know of a place quite like Hope and Healing across
the country.
It is
one of a kind. It's unique. The people of St. Martin's were real visionaries. Even setting it up as a separate nonprofit from
right,
the church
right.
was visionary in that we're able to engage the St. Martin's community and serve them as a ministry, but being a separate nonprofit, we can work with other institutions, medical schools, hospitals, clinics, places that wouldn't normally work with a church per se, because we aren't a church. We're a faith-based nonprofit organization. So it is a truly visionary foundation, and it's a great opportunity, I think, that I've had to come here and kind of lead it for a period of time.
We look forward to talking with you and having you come talk to us here at Houston Baptist University in the future.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Here at HBU, we influence the culture around us by challenging our students to put their beliefs into action every day.